This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Inside Story on BFM 89.9.
Good evening. This is Inside Story with Sharmila Ganesan and Lee Chui Lin. Tonight, we're looking at a huge report published by the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, or the IPCC, that sounds the alarm for climate change.
So first, we look at the role that industries and countries need to play in creating and enacting good environmental policies. And then we talk about how we as individuals can play a part. And finally, what to do if this makes you feel hopeless.
So tell us, do you worry about climate change? You can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. This is Inside Story. It is 6:07, and let's dive right into it. It is a huge report, after all. The world's largest report about climate change, in fact, and that was published on Monday, the 9th of August, by the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, or IPCC. And it includes, it was published by a group of more than 200 leading climate scientists looking at more than 14,000 scientific papers. And I think quite significantly, it comes less than 3 months before COP26, which is, of course, a key climate summit. And just to put it in very simple terms, things really don't look good.
No, they do not. So essentially, okay, it's not going to be cheerful, but this is what the report touched on. Again, this was a huge report, so we're giving a little bit of a Cliff's Notes here. So the global temperature was 1.09 Celsius higher between 2011 to 2020, so in the last decade, compared to 1850 and 1900. The past 5 years, in fact, have been the hottest on record since 1850. The rate of the sea levels rising has tripled compared to the period between 1901 and 1971. And importantly, human activities are the likely causes of climate change. In fact, one expert said it is unequivocal that human influence has warmed the atmosphere, oceans and lands. It also highlighted the fact that the warming that we've experienced and the impact that we're seeing has made changes to our planet's support systems that are irreversible.
So that word you use, unequivocal, it's actually been pointed out that this is the first time the IPCC has taken such a definitive stand. Before this, they were using phrases like quite likely, very likely. This is a line in the sand, guys. It is us. And to look at some of the consequences of these changes that the report is highlighting. So they're talking about extreme droughts in various regions across the globe, especially in the Mediterranean region, in Southwest Africa. And this will, of course, have a knock-on effect on agriculture, subsequently affecting the economy. Oceans will get progressively warmer, more acidic. Mountains and polar glaciers will continue to melt for decades or for centuries. And we'll see more and more intense floods. You know, not things that we haven't been warned about, not things that we haven't already been seeing reported on, but no less reason to be very concerned, especially as we look towards the kinds of policies and things that we need to put in place and should already be putting in place.
So part of the reason why we wanted to talk about this, and also why we've laid out our show in a very specific way, right, which is to say that we wanted to look first at policy, and then we wanted to end on that feeling of hopelessness and why it maybe doesn't have to be so, is because when you look at the report and how dire it is, and it mentions also that irreversible, that word irreversible, how some of the changes are not going to be things that we can backpedal, at best we can mitigate. The UN Secretary General, for example, Antonio Guterres, basically said, if we combine forces now, we can avert climate catastrophe. So that's what we're talking about. We're not talking about being able to go back to earlier times and earlier climes. Instead, we are just saying we need to do better so that we can avert what could be worse. And really, they're also saying that they're counting on government leaders and stakeholders to ensure that COP26 is a success. They're also talking about the need to use less fossil fuels to implement renewable energies and how these things need to happen at five times faster than their current pace. And the truth of the matter is, this is not something that us as individuals are going to be responsible for unless the individuals in question are CEOs of large corporations that work within the industries that we're talking about, because the changes that need to happen on a systemic level. I mean, I'm sure that there's still some part for the individual to play, along with, of course, pressuring policymakers. But policy, I think, is what we wanted to start with.
Yes, and because I think that it's been pointed out for a long time that not only is it a question of what the industries are responsible for, what various nations and countries are responsible for, but there's also the politics of all of that, right? In terms of, do we take into account history? Do we take into account which countries have historically been using more of our resources? Should that factor into how these decisions are made? And how do we make that separation between the need for economy, the need for countries to develop versus really taking into account these dire warnings that we've been hearing for a while? So it's quite a packed show. And as we started off with, not necessarily a happy one, but I think an important one that needs to be looked at. So we'd like to hear from you. What are your thoughts? Do you worry about climate change? You can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. Coming up after this, we'll be speaking with sustainability and climate change specialist Dr. Renard Siu. So keep it here on Inside Story, BFM 89.9.
Brainy, fancy material. BFM 89.9.
It is 6:13. You're listening to Inside Story with Sharmila and Lynn. And today we are discussing the IPCC's report on climate change from several angles. First, we're going to look at it from the point of view of industries, countries, and where the responsibilities lie. So we'd like to hear from you. Do you worry about climate change? Call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. And we're now joined by Dr. Renard Siu, who is a sustainability and climate change specialist. Dr. Renard, thank you for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Could you first sum up the main takeaways from the IPCC report that we should be paying attention to?
Yeah, so this is my personal opinion and judgment from actually having read the report. I think first and foremost, as you've rightly pointed out, there is a stark shift in the language use, with some of the strongest terms used to assert that humans are indeed causing climate change. And a line in the report, right, reads specifically that it is unequivocal that human influence has warmed the atmosphere, ocean, and land, as compared to previous reports, as you have pointed out, which uses, you know, probabilistic terms such as extremely likely, very likely, and so on and so forth. So there's simply no room for uncertainty here. The stark use of language, you know, does communicate a sense of urgency. And even the UN has called the report a code red for humanity. So that is, you know, my first observation. My second observation is that scientists have pointed out that even with the strictest cuts on emissions, it is unlikely that, you know, we'll be able to prevent global warming of 1.5 degrees above pre-industrial temperatures. Without immediate, you know, steep emissions cut, average temperatures will definitely cruise past 2 degrees by the end of this century. So, you know, that's disappointing to hear. Thirdly, as we already know, extreme weather events are becoming more prevalent. You know, we don't even have to read the report to observe this. We've already seen, you know, some of the worst heat waves in Canada hitting 49.5 degrees Celsius. That is, you know, like historic. We've never actually achieved that before. Not something to be very proud of. The wildfires in Turkey and Greece, you know, the once in a thousand floods that were put off in places like China and Germany, all literally happening back to back. It's actually a very dismal state to live in. But yet, this is the reality of the situation that we have to get used to. Sea level rise will pick up speed with the polar ice sheets melting and warming the ocean, which translates into flooding, clearly, in lowland areas. But what was also important to highlight from the report is this compounded effect. So in the past, what typically happens is that farmers like only have to deal with prolonged droughts, for example, and then there's a couple of breaks in between before they face floods. But because of the intervariability of rainfall with all this uncertainties and parameters, farmers or those involved in the agriculture industry these days have to face back-to-back catastrophic events, prolonged droughts followed by floods, which affect their crop use and the economy and their livelihoods. So these are just a few examples of key takeaways from this report that was issued on Monday.
And how can this report help to shape discussions and policy actions in Malaysia specifically?
Yeah, I think what is important to highlight here is that even before the IPCC report, assessment report 6 was issued, there was actually a summary done by the UNFCCC, the United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change, which did an analysis saying that even with all of the nationally determined contributions or NDCs from different countries, we are only able to cut down emissions by 1%. 1%, if I may just emphasize that. In order for us to meet that 1.5 degrees target, we needed 40 times of that. So this report that comes out, I hope it's a wake-up call. As the UN has called it, it's a code red for humanity. And we're really hoping that governments will really step up to the plate leading up to COP26 to really have real ambitious targets, because this is really about survival that we're talking about here.
And generally speaking, there do seem to be two areas that we need to look at here, right? So on the one hand, the role of industries. On the other hand, the role of governments. What is the interplay between these two?
I think what is required is a whole government and whole society approach. I think it would be unfair to just primarily put this on the government alone to tackle this. What we need at the end of the day is a systems change, not climate change. So in order for us to achieve that target, I think there needs to be more synergies, more partnerships between not just governments, the private sector, but also civil society organizations. Each of us have different strengths and different areas that we can contribute towards. So, let's work together on this to ensure that, we are able to withstand the impacts that is going to hit Malaysia.
So when it comes to taking responsibility, right, this issue, how do we account for the fact that certain nations, the G7, the G20, have had a larger part, really, in creating the situation that we're currently in and may play a larger role, therefore, in mitigating it?
I think this is an age-old debate. So there is something that is known as a common but differentiated principle. It's the idea that every nation wants to sort of work together to achieve the common goal of cutting down emissions, of achieving that 1.5 degrees Celsius limit. But our approach is different depending on where different countries are in terms of their growth and stability. And this is why negotiations are important. Negotiations such as the COP26 would really and very clearly highlight areas where developing countries fall short and what sort of support that are needed for more developed countries in terms of financial resources, technological resources, in order for them to achieve the emissions reduction targets that they have set. So it is different to a certain extent, and it's very difficult to compare, apples with apples, because different countries are at different stages of economic growth.
Are we seeing that kind of necessary cooperation, though? Because a lot of experts might argue we are not.
Yeah, I mean, that's an interesting observation, I would say, to a certain extent. There are definitely parties that are trying to sort of move governments, civil society organizations, the private sector, like towards that whole government, whole of society approach. But where we fall short, I think, is really in terms of the way that we monitor. So we may have some of the best policies that are in place or that have been written, but we do fall short in terms of implementation.
Looking at Malaysia, what are some of the major barriers that prevent us from taking a more ambitious approach to tackling this issue?
Yeah, I would say first and foremost, coordination. Just trying to set a national level target on emissions requires a whole lot of coordination, not just across different ministries, across the government, but you're also talking about various sectors, right, in Malaysia, those that are involved in agriculture, in the property and construction sector, in manufacturing and transportation, trying to get all these key players together, in one place to brainstorm, to align and to agree on what they should be doing. That in itself is a challenge, coordination. And then comes the issue around alignment. Yes, the government might want to set really ambitious targets, but then do we have the capacity or resources in order to mobilize, in order to help achieve, those targets that we've intended to? So comes, the next question around resources. Are we able to, do we have enough, right, in order to help cut down emissions at this point in time?
Let's hone in on industries, right? Not just locally, but in a global sense. What role do they play in addressing this crisis?
Well, I mean, industries or the private sector definitely have a huge role to play. And in fact, I think it's one of the areas where I think they have been neglected. So what a lot of industries would say is that they have this lack of idea around how their business impact has is sort of aligned to the government's agenda. So our government, for example, might say that, we have a target of wanting to hit, a 45% emissions reduction target. But a lot of industries struggle to understand how their own carbon footprint, how their own emissions and the activities that they do is actually aligned to that target. So I think there needs to be a lot of roundtable discussions, a lot of engagements with industry players, like in order for them to understand and to really brainstorm and agree upon what needs to be done.
From your point of view, then, what are some of the key policies that need to be implemented?
Yeah, I think one of the things that has been discussed or has certainly come up is actually this discussion around the possibility of enacting a climate act in Malaysia. I think this was definitely explored at one point in time, modeling after what the UK has had. And I think really the intention behind this is that regardless of who holds power within the government in the future, that as a nation, we're already committed towards, the emissions reductions target that we have set. And I think that was basically an approach that different civil society organizations was trying to very hard to push for. But of course, I would say so. I think there are certain challenges and pushbacks. I mean, we are, after all, an oil and gas nation. So we do rely quite heavily on fossil fuels. Yeah.
So if we do look at it from a government point of view, civil society members and legal experts have called for a revision of the Environmental Quality Act 1974, but we've really seen little change in that area. How important is it that the government implements these sorts of stricter policies to ensure our part in tackling law compliance issues when it comes to the environment?
Yeah, I think at the end of the day, as I've mentioned earlier, it's not just the policies that matter. We can have beautifully crafted policies, some of the best in the world, but it really boils down to implementation. We got to make sure that our enforcement, the way that we monitor, is equally as at that level of a at the same level as how beautifully written some of these policies are. Because we do have actually some of the strictest policies, right, in the EQA 1974. But yeah, if you've been hearing the news, right, in the past couple of years, like the incident in Sungai Kim, we're still seeing polluters, we're still seeing people being hospitalized because of things like around air quality and pollution that has been happening. So stricter monitoring is absolutely crucial. And in my opinion, at least, it's key to ensuring that we achieve whatever environmental objectives that we've set up to achieve.
So building on that, right, along with these policies, as you rightly point out, being the starting point, have we built in enough mechanisms for accountability? Have they been built in? Have they been adhered to? Are we thinking about that?
I think there's definitely some traction. Our current government is looking at various initiatives, such as My Climate Initiative, which brings together a quite broad range of different stakeholders. So there's definitely more engagement with civil society organizations, people within different governmental sectors, the forestry department, who are looking at even, how to protect and preserve our forests, which is an important carbon sink. So a lot of those discussions are in place. We were even at one point, at least from the government's perspective, exploring different mechanisms around carbon trading. So for me, I think we are definitely making a stride in the right direction. But obviously, there's a lot of room for improvement and still a lot of work remains to be done.
In that sense, then, is Malaysia prepared for the worst effects of the climate crisis?
That's a very good question. I think we are living in a present situation where there are a lot of uncertainties. We take COVID-19, for example, when it hit, a lot of businesses, a lot of industries were disrupted. So a key question that we need to ask is, you know, in Malaysia, are we actually prepared to adapt for the worst case scenario? So our national disaster, departments here in Malaysia have definitely projected and accounted for situations around, you know, flood level rise. In case that happens. But as I've mentioned earlier on, this is a whole government, whole of society approach. So it definitely requires a lot of partnerships from different stakeholders in order for us to enact systemic change, right? In order for us to be able to answer those questions around, are we prepared, fully prepared, right, for adaptation, for climate adaptation? And also bearing in mind that in Malaysia, we have quite a broad spectrum of people, like not just people living in urban city areas, but also those in rural and more marginalized communities. At the end of the day, like their needs need to be accounted for as well. Yeah.
So we have just about a minute left with you. Is there any message you'd like to leave us with?
Yeah, I think at the end of the day, I guess I would just sort of end by saying that even though whatever that has been painted since this fall, but please don't lose hope. I think it's important to not just look at a cup, right, as half filled or half empty, but the fact that it's always refillable. There's always something that you can do to make a change.
Dr. Renat, thank you for speaking with us today.
Thank you.
That was Dr. Renat Siu, Sustainability and Climate Change Specialist, weighing in on the governmental and industry aspects of the IPCC report and speaking in a larger sense about where their responsibility lies when it comes to climate change. So send your thoughts our way. Does climate change worry you? You can call us 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. And just drawing your attention to something we have coming up, what happens when our heart suddenly stops? Can someone who is young, healthy, and doesn't have any underlying heart conditions get a cardiac arrest? We'll be speaking to Datuk Dr. Yap Yee Guan, consultant interventional cardiologist from Sunway Medical Center, to find out why sudden cardiac arrests happen among the young and healthy and what can be done to improve their chances of survival if it happens. Tune in to Health and Living on the 16th of August at 4 p.m. to ask your questions.
Be firmly motivated. BFM 89.9.
It is 6:37. You're listening to Inside Story with Sharmila and Lynn. And We've been talking about the IPCC climate change report, and really earlier we focused on governments, industries. Now we are shifting our attention to talking about personal responsibility, as it were. It may not seem like there's a lot that we can do, but we wanted to talk about how that might feel like. What are some ways in which we can still make our voices heard, make some impact on change? But we've also been asking you for your thoughts. We're asking you whether you've been worried about climate change. And we've got some messages.
So first up, Li Ling says, of course I'm worried about climate change. The reality is, though, for most people, they can't even make ends meet. They're probably in debt. Do you think climate change is going to be at the top of their priorities list? I fear not. So yeah, we're doomed. And, you know, I think that that definitely reflects how a lot of people are feeling, Li Ling, particularly the we're doomed, which is what we wanted to get into after this. But also the thing about prioritization. I remember reading about how Greta Thunberg described her realization, right, that climate change was going to be the thing that she was going to focus on. And she said that basically once she found out about it, she could not stop thinking about it and she could not not do anything about it. And I think that for many of us, We join her on the first phase, but not on the second, meaning when we first hear about the scope of it, we're so taken aback by it that a lot of us back away. I think a lot of us just go back to living our lives the way we normally would. Maybe we take one less plastic bag or one less plastic straw, but we don't sit in front of a government building, right, and refuse to go to school because it's just the enormity of it is so much. And for all these reasons that Li Ling's talking about, among others.
Well, if you want to look on the other end of the spectrum, though, we have this from Healy, who says, don't the billionaires investing in space trips give you the hint that they simply don't care? And, you know, Healy, I think that many people would join you in feeling that way. I don't know why, but I feel like over the course of the last few decades, and definitely in the last year or so, this idea of adulating billionaires who do things for their own gratification has definitely changed the way I look at the space race and these sorts of trips and endeavors, because truly, there are so many better ways to be spending their money. So keep those thoughts coming. Do you worry about climate change? You can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. And now to pick up on that conversation about personal responsibility, we have joining us Nadia Rosli, Project Director at Internews in Malaysia. Nadia, thank you for being with us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
So that IPCC report has highlighted how some of these planetary changes are actually now irreversible. What were your initial thoughts on hearing that?
What you mentioned earlier about people expressing their anxiety and, you know, the huge concern and worry, I mean, I felt obviously the same way. Just reading the report and knowing that, you know, we're going to hit the 1.5 degrees no matter what by 2040, right? If we're lucky, it's going to be at that time, or no, if we're not lucky, it's going to be sooner. So there was obviously a sense of foreboding. And then came the question, do people in power really care about taking bold action, you know, towards hitting those targets that we need? So, and there was one line that kind of struck out to me when I read one of the news articles on this about a scientist explaining it as, our atmosphere has been exposed to doping. So that really kind of, was very worrying as well.
There has been a huge focus on countries, on industries having to make changes, and how, you know, kind of displacing the responsibility onto individuals isn't necessarily the way to go. What are your thoughts on this? I mean, is there a role for individuals to play in this crisis?
I would say yes and no. I think firstly is, I think I want to push against the idea of individual actions like recycling, eating less meat, changing the light bulb as having the most impact, right, for this problem. Because the responsibility of solving climate change shouldn't be on our shoulders as individuals because of the magnitude. So we need a change on a bigger scale, a structural change, and we need to think long term. So, I think as individuals, we can still do a lot of things, but we need to think about the policy level and also working on a grassroots level where we can actually make concrete changes. So if, for instance, we need to hold our lawmakers and industries accountable. So how do we do that? We need to push for policies through our decision makers. We need to write to our local governments to make sure that they know that we care about the issue of our environment and climate change. We have to be politically active, and we need to vote the right people who have the right policies for our environment, because obviously this is a ripple effect. If they think about those things, then obviously it's going to address a whole lot of other issues as well, not just climate change. Even the banks that we use, we need to start in using banks that are divesting from fossil fuels. So we need to know whether our banks are, you know, investing in coal or, you know, in fossil fuels, and whether these banks are investing in clean energy or technology. So, so individually, yes, there are a lot of things we can do, but I think we need to maybe shift that attention to lawmakers, decision makers, and the industries as well.
So how can we educate and inform ourselves on those issues, policymakers, decision makers? Where can we get that kind of information, and where can we start, really?
So obviously climate literacy is such a huge topic, right? But it doesn't need to be overwhelming if you know where to start. I think firstly, we need to understand the scale of the problem. So I guess then we can actually start thinking about, you know, how we want to address this, what's our personal capacity in actually affecting change. So obviously we need to educate ourselves. We need to equip ourselves with knowledge. You also need to think about climate change as a topic that, you know, is taught across many subjects, or it has to be interdisciplinary. So we need to have engagement across disciplines. So it's not solely the topic, within the domain of science, for instance. So we need to start talking about climate change, the intersection of this with health, with our food systems, with our economy, even with our psychology, and natural disasters and all of these things. And also, I think a good place to start as well, there's plenty of documentaries on climate change on our planet that we can watch. There's several of them on Netflix. There's a genre called climate fiction or sci-fi. There's a lot of novels on that you can start looking at and actually reading a lot of these really great books. There's citizen science kind of initiatives that you can participate in, whether it's monitoring seagrass if you live by the coastal area, or bird watching, even tree planting. All of these activities, these hands-on activities, you will see actually how climate change directly impacts your ecosystems and your day-to-day life as well.
So I wanted to talk about this issue of advocacy, right? This idea of making our voice heard. For people who aren't maybe active in the scene necessarily, that can feel quite daunting. How can people start, just talking about it a bit more, or working to apply some pressure towards policymakers or the like?
I think mobilizing action at the grassroots level is probably where you can make the most impact. You know, what's happening in your own neighborhoods, what's happening in your own communities. So, just having like a voice or to group yourself or to mobilize your community and to start talking with your local government, to start talking with your town representatives on the issues concerning climate change, and to find out what are their climate action strategies, what are the mitigation adaptation strategies for your own city, for your own town. So that may seem like maybe like a small splash, I guess, in the ocean. But if everyone mobilizes their own communities, like, you know, the local to, I guess, the higher level engagement starts from grassroots.
Nadia, what would you like to leave us with?
Hopefully, please don't be too depressed. I think that the biggest takeaway from the IPCC is, yes, we are facing all these challenges, but we can still make, an impact and try to reverse, the rise in temperature. But obviously, like you said, start educating yourself. Please mobilize your communities. Talk to your family and your friends about climate change. Read up all you can on climate change. And I guess just try to make that connection to your day-to-day and have like a positive attitude if you can, and also have those values close to your heart. And make sure you know what you're fighting for, because I think that's, I guess, the thing that will get us through this.
Nadia, thanks for speaking with us today.
Thank you so much.
That was Nadia Rosli, Project Director at Internews in Malaysia, speaking to us about the sorts of personal actions that might make a difference when it comes to this question of climate change. And we're, of course, talking about that in the wake of the IPCC report coming out this week. Coming up after this, we'll discuss climate anxiety, really something that many of us might be feeling now. But meanwhile, keep sending your thoughts our way. Does climate change worry you? You can call us 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018 789 8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. Coming up after this, we'll be speaking with Aru Ayuni, who is a researcher with Climate Action Malaysia. So keep it here on Inside Story, BFM 89.9.
Bole for Malaysia. Ha. BFM 89.9, the business station.
It is 6:49. You're listening to Inside Story with Sharmila and Lynn. And today we've been discussing the IPCC report on climate change, which really has been ringing the alarm bell for how serious the issue is. And we've been looking at this from several angles, but really one thread that has come through very strongly in all of this is this question of how it makes us feel, a sense of general anxiety, and how to deal with that, really, as we also advocate for the kinds of changes that need to be made. So that's what we're going to be closing off the show with, discussing the question of climate anxiety. And we'd, of course, like to hear from you. Are you worried about climate change? Call us 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018 789 8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. We're now joined by Aru Ayuni, who is a researcher at Climate Action Malaysia. Aru, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
How would you describe climate anxiety?
Well, I would describe it as an intense worry about climate change and its effects right now and in the future.
And what are some of the worries that a person having climate anxiety would have?
Well, for people who are already facing the impacts right now, they would worry if it's going to kill them tomorrow. For example, like my friends in the Philippines, they worry if the next storm or typhoons are going to hit their home, if they're going to lose their homes. And for those that worry about the future, they might worry what it's going to look like for their families, for their friends, for themselves. And it's also worry about the inaction of our governments, where, you know, a lot of governments, they have low ambitions and there's so many vague commitments that's going on right now. And for on a personal capacity, it's also worrying that we're not doing enough personally.
So is the sense of climate anxiety something we've always recognized? How long has this term been around?
It's not something that we've always recognized. I think the term really became popular only for the past 3 years or so. Especially in Malaysia, there's still a stigma when it comes to talking about, you know, mental health, let alone mental health related to climate crisis. So there's very, very little research going on around the world. And in Malaysia, there's almost none articles talking about it. And, you know, every time, whenever a disaster hits, right, in Malaysia, we tend to overlook the mental health aspect of it. I've heard a lot of stories of communities on the ground, on a grassroots level, where when you talk to the communities, they actually share, you know, the mental health aspect of it, what they think of these disasters. And I think we tend to overlook that. We always focus on the urban part, you know, how people feel about climate change. But what about the people that we don't really see on the news? What about people living in rural areas?
You mentioned earlier how some of your friends in the Philippines deal with this, or how it manifests for them. Yeah. Have you been personally affected?
Yes. So my story is kind of unique because I've been going around the world because my dad's job requires me to do that. And I've been going through climate impacts all my life, but I never really realized it, only like for the past 2 years or so. So I've gone through floods. My families who are still in parts of Indonesia are still facing floods, health impacts caused by climate change. And I've only realized that now. So that's pretty unique. And I work with a lot of activists around the world, not just, you know, in the Philippines. And I think one important thing is that I noticed that it's really important for us to know how to channel this anxiety. I mean, for me, what I do is, you know, I start a movement here in Malaysia, but it can really go bad, especially for youth, if they don't know how to channel this, you know, negative feelings. And and in Malaysia, I've seen it on the ground myself. In Indonesia, I still have families there that's facing the impacts. In the Philippines, my friends. And, you know, for me in Malaysia, how it manifests itself is that, I do get anxieties. I do burn out. I have breakdowns someday. But I also see that I've only noticed that in the past few weeks that I also overwork myself because of the worry that I have in me. So that's something that I'm worried about as well, because, you know, I'm still young and I see this pattern among my friends as well. And one thing I notice is that I also feel not productive when I'm not talking about climate change. I used to study computer science, and that's not related to climate change at all. And I felt like I was wasting my time for the whole 3 years. So that's how it manifests in me.
So on that note, really, some of the reactions that we've seen people talk about, feeling like there's nothing that can be done, deciding not to have children because the future seems hopeless. And these are all sort of fairly heavy things to have to carry around. Mm-hmm. What advice would you give to someone to work through these feelings?
Well, I cannot speak for everyone, but I feel that the most important thing, you know, not just for activists, but for anyone that know about the climate issue, it's really important that you find group of friends that can understand you. It's, you know, you can find friends either from the movement or outside the movement. I have pretty much like the balanced number of friends. I have friends who work in the climate justice movement, and then I also have friends that don't know anything at all about climate change. So it's really funny, and laughter is like the most important thing that keeps me going every day, keeps me hopeful, you know, by the end of the day whenever I feel upset. Like the recent IPCC report that just came out, I took a day off. I hang out with my friends. So that kind of recovery is really important. And since we're in a pandemic, well, you gotta have to do it online. I think all of my friends, my peers know about this as well. And another advice I would give is, I guess, trust the science. I know there's a lot of sad news about the latest IPCC report, but one thing that we know is that it is still possible for us to keep our temperature around 1.5 degrees Celsius if we act now. So there's still that possibility, you know, and it's really important to be careful not to fall into climate doomism where you feel like, you know, there's nothing to be done. Might as well, you know, just do nothing at all. So it's really important you avoid that narrative as well. There's that narrative going around in the media. And another important thing is to take frequent breaks, especially my activist friends. You know this. You guys know this. You overwork yourself. And you need to understand that everyone has different thresholds of coping with bad news, coping with, you know, all this big information. So we're all not the same. We cope differently. So I guess you need to know that. Yeah.
Aru, thank you for speaking with us today.
Thank you.
That was Aru Ayuni, researcher at Climate Action Malaysia, speaking to us about climate anxiety and how we can manage it. And on that note, we've been asking you for your thoughts. We've been asking you if you're worried about climate change. And we've got so many messages. Just let's have a look at some of them. We have this from Katrina.
Katrina says, I think billionaires and governments are well aware of the climate crisis and the impacts on all of us. For one example, the increased securitization of borders as governments know more people will be on the move, either seeking asylum from climate-related conflicts or catastrophes, or migrants who no longer have work in their home countries because of the impact of the climate. Of course, addressing the crisis with violence will be devastating, but in the absence of a collective vision for care and healing in all aspects of our policies and infrastructure, that's what will happen. I completely agree with Nadia that all issues are connected. We don't have a choice whether to care about the climate crisis or not. It will affect everything. I'm anxious, absolutely, but do your work wherever you can. Defend fundamental human rights. Be bold in making demands to those in power. We have a right to life. We need to fight for it for all of us. No more individual small solutions. Bold, imaginative, and urgent visions are needed now.
Katrina, 100% agree with everything you said. I love that phrase you used about being bold and making demands to those in power, because I think that's where I find I often feel hopeless when it comes to talking about climate change. And I think that if nothing else, being able to use my voice in being able to do it in the work I do outside of that, that gives me some amount of hope to continue doing it.
We also have this message here from on Twitter who says, how many IPCC reports have there been? Is there anything new in this recent one except for stronger language? If the focus remains on shareholder value instead of stakeholder value or economic growth, then we are at an impasse. I fear that the human race will once again press snooze on the climate change wake-up call. So for what it's worth, this is the sixth assessment of its kind since the panel started. And I think that there is newness, not just because of the stronger language, but because of what they use the stronger language to say, which is to say, it is on us, it is our fault, and to actually give a timeline of what's going to happen if we fail to address what needs to be addressed. And I know that there's similarities in the past, but perhaps there is also a growing sensitivity to it from the public.
Yes, and I think the fact that we are getting, I'm seeing these things being shared on Instagram, you know, as images and fact cards. So I think the continuous speaking about it is important, and getting people to realize where the pain points are is also important. Keep those thoughts coming. Are you worried about climate change? You can call us 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. This has been Inside Story, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.